You're listening to episode 344 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Max, this is like 3 weeks in a row you've been home. I'm really starting to worry about this.
Yeah, well, give me another week and I'll be, maybe I'll be in the Vermont woods, in the Green Mountain National Forest. But we'll see how it goes.
Oh, I can't wait for the internet connection there. But we've got a great show tonight, and we don't have any stories.
That's
but
right.
We've got two fantastic guests. So, Max, take it away with introductions.
Well, previously, of course, David, we talked about the FAA selecting 8 companies to assist with the development of a key enabling technology, that being remote ID. One of those companies is Skyward, a Verizon company. And they develop commercial drone management and airspace intelligence platforms. You can find them at skyward.io. Well, this episode, we have two guests from Skyward, President Mariah Scott and Product Manager Amanda Breeze. Now, in her career, Mariah Scott has taken businesses from creation through exit. She's built new markets in commercial drones, healthcare, identity services, and media delivery, and all that across North America, Europe, and Asia. Now, as president of Skyward, she helps enterprises realize the potential of drones. And she's built a company through startup to a successful acquisition by Verizon. And Skyward Software now manages drone programs for Fortune 500 companies, as well as drone flight service startups. Mariah, we're happy to have you join us on the UAV Digest.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And also with us is Amanda Breeze. She's the product manager for Skyward's web application. She leads front-end development and works closely with design and engineering teams to deliver Skyward software features. Amanda has 10 years of experience working in engineering and support roles. Amanda, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, well, let's start off with remote ID. Mariah, we've seen the industry say over and over that remote ID is kind of a precursor to the end goals we really want to achieve, things like beyond visual line of sight, and package delivery, and night operations. So in general, how is the development of remote ID progressing?
Well, I think in general, we're encouraged to see the FAA support for it. And we're expecting the rule to come out by the end of the year. That's, I think, what the FAA has publicly stated. We were very honored to be selected in the initial cohort to assist the FAA in really putting together the technology requirements so that companies can develop the applications that provide the remote identification. It's a one of the things I like about remote ID and the way FAA is approaching it is that it's the same kind of public-private partnership that they used for Lance. And I think we were the first company approved to offer Lance, which is the digital access, automated access to controlled airspace. And since then, the FAA has been very successful in bringing on a number of different companies to provide that service and make it pretty easy and ubiquitous for pilots to get their Lance authorization. So we're looking for that same model with remote ID, where you've got an initial cohort. We're working closely as a cohort and with the FAA to prove out the technical requirements, get the final rule out. And then we look forward to a similar process where you'll have multiple suppliers of the service, multiple ways for pilots to be able to adopt that remote identification technology. And I do agree with the statement that you said. It's an absolutely fundamental building block. We can't have safe integration to the airspace if we don't know who's flying. We have to be able to identify who's flying before we're going to do any of the more advanced operations. So I think it's very much a foundational building block, and I'm impatient for it to be here.
Sure, yes.
Wow. Now, there's a phrase that we don't hear too often in the drone industry, impatience.
Yeah. Yeah, David's being sarcastic. Yeah. You know, as sort of a pacing item, some people might, wonder if it's an effort that could have been started earlier in this journey, let's say. I'm thinking, though, that all the work that's gone ahead of it was kind of necessary before we could start really addressing remote ID in this way. Do you think that's an accurate portrayal, Mariah?
I do think it's true that there's a lot of foundational work that needed to happen to bring all of the different groups together around a rule and what it would be and what it would be for, how that might work, and foundation. And really, Lance was also a great foundational step because it showed that this was possible, that the FAA could find a different model, and that if they, a different model rather than a more federalized model, this public-private partnership, and that if they did, industry would also follow suit. So I think that that also was really important to see that, yes, industry and the FAA can work together this way, it can be successful, and now we can build on it with the next step with remote ID. So yes, that's true. And I will say, you know, the technology is here. I mean, we participated together with Wing and AirMap and CNN last year in a demonstration of remote ID technology and how it can be used for flight operations. So the industry's ready, and we're excited about that collaboration.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the cohort operated, what the process was? I imagine that given the pandemic and all, you didn't have face-to-face meetings, but how did that work out for the group?
I think that we had one or maybe two meetings face-to-face before the pandemic. And then it has been virtual. And now the FAA, as I'm sure you know, received many, many comments to the initial proposed rule. And so they've been in that process of digesting all of that and making the edits towards the final rule. And so now we're in that part of the process of waiting for that final rule.
So what do you think Skyward contributed to the group?
We're acting primarily as a USS, as a a UAS service supplier. So building on that role of being able to provide the technology building blocks, contribute those technical requirements for how this would work. We've been very strong on the networked-based remote ID, being a Verizon company. Right? We believe that the network is a great way to provide that remote identification service, whether the drone is connected directly or that connection is through the ground control station. Those are, I think, both viable options. So we've worked primarily in the networked-based remote identification pieces.
And sometimes people ask, well, what about if you're conducting drone operations in a place that has no network coverage? You know, you're out, in the...
The wilderness of Vermont.
The wilderness of Vermont, or the some remote location, or out in an agricultural setting that's in the Midwest somewhere that maybe doesn't have the connectivity. How are we proposing to address that?
In the proposed rule, the FAA notes both broadcast solutions and networked-based solutions, and so I really see it as a multi-layered approach that. There are broadcast options which don't provide the level of information, the same level of information that a networked-based option would provide, but are still great options in those, especially in those cases where you might not have network coverage. And of course, as a Verizon company, we are very committed to ensuring that we have the nation's most reliable network and the best. You know, I had to get that in there, right?
Yeah, you did that pretty well. Very skillful, Mariah. Yeah. So that's good. So where are we now in the process of getting to some definitive remote ID methodology and requirements?
Yeah, the next step will be the publication of the final rule from the FAA. And that's the last report I heard from the UAS Integration Office was that they're still targeting the end of the year.
End of the year, right. Mm-hmm.
Are you expecting any surprises based on all of the comments, or do you think it's going to be fairly straightforward?
I am expecting that they received a lot of comments and that we will see some changes as a result of that. I'm not informed on what those changes are. They are very careful there. They need to be, obviously. But I know that they received many, many comments and that there's been a very thoughtful process in incorporating that feedback and thinking about it. So I would expect that there are changes in the final rule.
Yeah, Max and I both are very pro leaving comments on RPMs, but we also stress that if you're going to do it, make it valuable. You know, don't just leave some snarky comment that isn't going to waste everybody's time. But it seems like as we've gone through these over the years, they've provided a lot of good, useful data for the FAA, and the FAA seems to be taking them in and working with them and absorbing what they've gotten and provided a product that sort of satisfied you can't satisfy everybody, but satisfy a lot of people.
Yeah. This will be a change in the way the industry works. Certainly. I think it's a really positive and beneficial step to unlocking the potential of drones to really transform the way we do business. I mean, it's a foundational thing, but it will change the way people operate, and it will require new registrations and certifications and tracking. And I think the good news is that most drone manufacturers seem to think that they can meet the technical requirements with software updates rather than requiring some kind of expensive new equipment. So that's very encouraging. So I think that we can really minimize some of the concerns around cost implications, but it will change the way we operate, I think, for the better and to move it towards more professional types of operations.
That's good. Very encouraging. Very encouraging. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things going on at Skyward. And Amanda, I understand there's a new approval workflow feature that's part of the platform, something that's new. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so our approval workflow feature, our newest enterprise feature, we built this feature to help program managers gain more insight into their ops before they fly. Our goal at Skyward is really to help our customers reduce risk. And this feature is really about making sure that the critical information that they need is shared between the crew and the program managers. We want to help those program managers make good informed decisions. And the feature itself, is pretty straightforward. Pilots simply kind of log in and create their operation, and then they can request approval from anyone designated as an approver in the system. They respond and can review all of the information on the operation and kind of proceed as they see fit.
You mentioned risk. Can you tell us or give us some examples of the kinds of risks that Skyward is trying to mitigate for operators?
Sure. So we have customers in a lot of different industries, from energy, transportation, mining. Any of those industries are going to have risk that they need to manage and mitigate. When I think about this tool and in situations where an approver might, raise some caution, is if they're flying specific types of missions and the pilot maybe isn't qualified for that mission, they aren't current on the aircraft that they're flying. Weather is always, problematic. For example, right now and here in Oregon, there's lots of smoke, and obviously you can't fly in those kinds of conditions. So there's a lot of different risks across the industry. It just depends on what industry you're in and what types of risks you're managing and mitigating.
A lot of what we think about is the, not uncommon for many new technologies, the operational risk of adopting a new technology. So, you're a pilot, you've got a drone, you're out there on the job site, you're like, okay, I'm going to fly. But if you're the quality manager of that construction project, you might have different concerns about the operational risk of flying. Do you have permission from the landowner to fly there? Have you documented that you've got access to that airspace? And so as much as it's not the coolest part of operating a drone program to think about managing your operational risk and making sure that everyone stays safe and compliant, it is really critical for the adoption of the technology that the company itself feels comfortable that if they deploy this risky asset out to a job site, it will be used correctly and it will be used in a way that doesn't downstream cause additional risk to a job or to the data that they're collecting.
I like the thought of having a hierarchical sign off. You know, it back when I was in insurance or doing programming or program management, we would have like art where you'd have various levels of sign off as it would go up the chain of command. So when you implemented something, you knew that everybody was on board before it happened. The only problem with that theory was occasionally trying to get the managers to actually open the email to sign off on the product. But that being said, I like the idea that you're getting a buy-in from not just the drone pilot, but other people as well, having eyes on the project.
Mm-hmm. Increasingly, what we've seen is that companies across many different industries are discovering that they can train their employees to fly drones rather than needing to outsource it and hire a dedicated flight services provider. In many industries, they're discovering this is another tool that my bridge inspector can use or my construction manager can use. I just need to train them to fly the drone. With that then comes the need for approval and oversight in that workflow. So you know that they're using the tool at the right time and they've got the permissions they need and they have the training and you've got it documented that the bridge inspection happened with all the correct approvals that it needed on the chain. So that's where this is.
Amanda, what platforms is this on? If you're a pilot, a drone pilot, is this going to be an app on your phone? How are you going to provide this service?
We have our web application and a mobile application as well. The approval workflow feature is primarily right now in the web application. So you're going to plan your mission in the web and fill out your risk assessment form, which is another feature that we released this year. Fill out your checklist, choose your area of operation, get your LANCE authorization. And from there, you can request approval from your management. Our mobile application, you can do all the same kind of planning. We are hoping to have this approval workflow feature in that mobile application soon.
In mobile being iOS and Android?
We support iOS currently and are looking forward to releasing an Android app very soon here in the future.
Yeah, great, great. You know, it also occurs to me that when we talk about, you know, a company or an organization looking to minimize the risk or the, you know, the chances that something is going to happen that's unsafe or otherwise damaging, that since this industry is so young, that if it's something major that happens that damages the company, it could damage the reputation of the industry as well. So, I mean, if somebody starts doing something with drones that results in some kind of a really critically bad situation, that it could reflect on the whole industry and damage the whole industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that Skyward does really well is support programs as they grow. So we really like to help programs get off the ground and help them grow in the right ways. And I think this is really important, is managing risk, whether you're a program that's been doing this for years and you've got a lot of pilots or you're just starting out. This is definitely something that you have to keep in mind as you kind of grow your program and ensure that you're flying safely.
One thing that concerns many organizations and those looking to provide services is the pace of the regulatory machine. And I mean, we've touched on some aspects of that in terms of the industry government cooperation and how that's worked so well. But I don't know let me ask the question, Mariah. When Skyward was getting started, did you ever think that it would be this long before things were, you know, where you wanted them to be in the end?
Our loaded drone question.
Yeah. Well, when I started at Skyward is 2014, and flying drones commercially was still illegal. And there were about 7 companies, I think, at that time who had received special Section 333 exemptions to be able to fly. And of course, because, you know, we were a startup and we were out raising money, we were out telling investors, there are 7 companies who can do this. It's about to explode. And by that measure, it has exploded. I mean, we have several 100,000 commercial licensed pilots. There's you know, something like a million registered drones in the U.S. And so it has, the market has really grown. We've seen adoption across pretty much all major industries, and we've seen use cases, you know, really take off. So I think from that perspective, the industry has grown really quickly. There are things like the holy grail of flying beyond line of sight that, yes, 6 years ago I thought was a few years out, and now I pretty much still think it's a few years out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I have seen the industry really grow. I've seen a lot of sophistication in the use cases. Our customers see real return on investment in the first year of operating a drone program. So, you know, the companies who are implementing the technology, even with some of the limitations we might have today, are still saving money, saving time, reducing cost, keeping employees safe. So there's a lot of value there. You know, as a kind of a technology entrepreneur, I always want things to move faster. But I also think that we, relative to where we were 6 years ago, it's, you know, tremendous progress.
Well, Amanda, how did you come to be interested in drones and Skyward? Because you have a background in insurance, I guess, and some other things. What led you to Skyward?
I've been lucky enough to actually know Mariah and had reached out to her just in a time of really struggling in my career with what to do next. And she pointed me in the direction of some of her staff. And ultimately that led to my employment at Skyward, which I'm very grateful for. I hadn't really known a lot about drones previously, but have learned a ton in my year here at Skyward, and I'm really happy to be a part of this team.
So what is it, you know, about drones, about unmanned aircraft that floats your boat the most? I mean, you know, you mentioned that, you know, at the beginning you weren't that familiar with it, but of course I'm sure it was a crash course in this industry. What about it is most appealing to you, just sort of on a personal level?
My career has really been spent on continuous improvement and return on investment. I spent a lot of years in technology doing continuous improvement work. And I think the thing I find most satisfying about drone technology is seeing customers use it to just drastically improve processes, save money, keep people safe. There's a lot of processes now that can be done with drones that really put people in harm's way before. And so I just love to see things that I just never imagined possible. I see our customers do them every day and see this tremendous return on investment and streamline their processes. And I think that's great.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, we started this particular podcast in 2013, I think, David. And one of the things that we've said all along is that, you know, we can imagine a couple of really good use cases, but you could just tell that there were many, many times more good uses that we haven't even been able to think of yet, you know, that are, you know, years into the future, we'll discover these great applications that provide real significant value. And I think it's, that's becoming the case. It's proving out.
Mariah, give me your TED talk or your elevator talk on why drones.
Why drones is for me, like why internet or why electricity? I mean, why not?
Well,
that's a good answer.
It's a good answer. You know, when I tell people that, oh, I fly drones and I talk about drones on a podcast, they sort of look at me. What's your breakthrough to explain to somebody who isn't familiar with the processes or the products, et cetera, that catch that you use to get them interested in the subject?
Typically fall back to a phrase that we have used for years and years, dull, dirty, and dangerous, in that drones eliminate, because they automate, drones automate tasks that humans find dull, dirty, and dangerous. And that produces a tremendous benefit. And if you think about a lot of the things that drones are used for, they're fairly mundane uses. Okay, you don't have to climb a tower anymore. You can fly a drone up there. You don't have to hang off a bridge and try to see if it's cracked. You can fly a drone there. You don't have to do repetitive tasks because you can have the drone fly that acreage in, you know, a tenth of the time that it would take you to survey it with an ATV. So I often fall back to that dull, dirty, and dangerous. And wouldn't you rather have a machine do those tasks for you if you could?
Great answer. Max said we started this early. And when we started this, one of the reasons why it was driving me nuts was every time the word drone showed up, it was either a predator or a reaper firing a hellfire at some desert. Now we've gone full circle. It's a DJI quadcopter in every video. But that being said, I mean, we've always tried to show drones for good, but I like the 3Ds. I'm going to steal that from you, Mariah, but I'll give you credit for a couple of years until I forget.
You are more than welcome. We also love drones for good. From the very beginning of the company, we have really focused on highlighting all the uses and the benefits of drones for good.
Yeah, and there are a lot of them. I mean, we've talked about anti-poaching efforts. We've talked about, you know, moving medical supplies in time of need, the ability to
search and rescue.
Search and rescue. The good side of the ledger is really kind of amazing and wonderful to see.
It's true. We had one of our customers actually just a few weeks ago for the Hurricane Laura response used our Skyward system and our live flight tracking and situational awareness system to be able to, in real time, track and monitor drone operations. They had 12 teams deployed across a multi-state area, all doing response in Hurricane Laura. And they were able to safely have those teams deployed and managed, and also be able to safely monitor and track that whole operation from the headquarters in Georgia, because they were using a system. They were using a Skyward system. They were using live flight tracking. It was a really nice, not only drones for good, but just when I think about kind of how far we've come to be able to coordinate and manage that kind of a real-time disaster response and get those kind of outcomes. It was really nice for us to see.
How about you, Amanda? What victories have you discovered in your interactions with the industry?
You know, one of the things that has really stood out to me, I live outside of Portland on this big island that's about the size of Manhattan, and it's almost entirely agriculture. And walking around where I live, I just think about all these huge fields that, you know, need water and fertilizer, and they can use drones to just fly those fields and take pictures and use systems to determine how their watering systems are working and how their fertilizer is working. And when I think about, you know, where I grew up in Pennsylvania, of these big farm lands and just the amount of efficiency that these people are going to get, the time saved and the money saved, that's one of my favorite use cases in the industry right now.
Yeah, that's a great use case because of the targeting. So, you know, if you can identify just a small area that needs insect control or fertilizer or water, something, you can just target those instead of having to, you know, broadly apply to a much larger section. There are just so many great applications. It's just exciting. And I think that's why, you know, many, many people either have or would like to get into the industry one way or another. Maybe as a sort of a closing point, has the pandemic sort of put that on that growth, that employment opportunity on hold a little bit, or are we still marching forward?
Actually, I'm so grateful that you asked that question, because the pandemic has given us an opportunity to really rethink the way we're organized and the way we operate. Like many organizations, you know, I mean, across the world, really, we've all been working from home since March. And we will be working from home for the, I don't know, through the end of the year, at least. But what we found is that we've actually figured out how to be pretty productive as a remote organization with a lot of distributed work teams. And it's kind of one of the surprising and sort of wonderful unanticipated consequences of COVID. And what that means for hiring is it's actually allowed us to think differently about how we hire. We're primarily based in Portland, Oregon. But we've seen that we can operate remotely with these distributed teams. So it's allowed us to open up our hiring to a remote first practice. And that helps us just attract a lot more people and a lot more diverse candidates and of all types of experiences and backgrounds. And I think build a much stronger team. I actually did an onboarding session just this morning with three new employees who are in three different locations. And it's great. I mean, they're all on Zoom to me. So it's at some level. But that's been kind of a really nice part of the thinking about growth and thinking about being able to just harness a lot wider swath of talent and people and get them on board the team. So,
yeah, that's amazing. And like you say, kind of unintended consequence, but one that really could prove to be quite beneficial. All right. Well, it's been a great conversation. Tell us where the website is the best place for people to go to learn more about Skyward.
Absolutely. If you're interested in learning more, it's skyward.io. And you can find case studies, you can find product information, you can find information about upcoming webinars. Next week is the Commercial UAV Expo, and we will be speaking and virtually exhibiting, and there'll be a lot of Skywardians there at the Commercial UAV Expo. Thank you so much for having us. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Great. Well, it's been our pleasure. Mariah Scott, President of Skyward, and Amanda Breeze, Product Manager. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of the UAV Digest. Of course, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's simply theuavdigest.com/344.
And of course, if you want to find us on the interwebs, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. But most of all, Max and I want to meet you virtually on our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, and we'll send you a link and you can join the conversation there from anything from Formula One to the drone of the week. So we cover it all on our Slack listener team. And of course, you can always purchase some swag on our Cafe Press store. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Stay safe out there, fly safe, and see you next week.